Jeremiah, if you would. Jeremiah chapter 8. And in our study of Jeremiah, Jeremiah, remember, lives in a time when he is one of the prophets dealing with Judah and Jerusalem. His ministry is to awaken and to warn the people of Judah and Jerusalem that what happened to the 10 tribes by Assyria 100 years ago is going to happen to the 2 tribes. And Nebuchadnezzar is coming down. And they are to take heed and pay attention. And God has given us his record of that. And it is very similar to our world right now. So all of this is rather relevant because we live in a world like this. And in the process, reminding ourselves that we're in the presence of God who recorded this. So as we read, God, you can help us understand what you've said and why you said it. So looking to God in the light of that, Jeremiah, remember the verdict has been leveled against Judah, Jerusalem, and it is set in motion. They have determined in their heart and head not to change, not to fix anything at all. So when we come down, if we can pick up our thought, in verse 13, I will surely consume them. I'm surely going to do that. I'm utterly going to do that. I'm going to, using the, you can't see it in your English translation, I am going to harvest them, literally. You harvest crops, I'm going to harvest Israel. I'm going to judge them. Now, I will surely consume them, saith the Lord. There shall be no grapes on the vine, nor figs in the fig tree. It's a very unproductive farm. Nor figs on the fig tree. And the leaf shall fade, and the things that I have given them shall pass away from them. In other words, all that they have, I'm going to take away. All that I've given them, I'm going to consume them, I'm going to take everything away. So therefore, now you have, verse 14, you have the response in the light of that. And now, and you need to remember now, you're going to see it in a minute, just up in, if you go up, here's Jerusalem, and if you go 100-something miles north, just past the Sea of Galilee by a 20-something miles, and go north, you're going to come to the tribe of Dan. And when you come to that tribe, that's where Nebuchadnezzar is. When you read this, Nebuchadnezzar has started down, coming down. So Dan is the northernest tribe up there, and he's coming down upon them. So keeping that in mind, it helps you in verse 14. So, why do we sit still? Why are we sitting still? There's an invasion coming. It is coming upon us, and all we that live in the countryside, in the rural areas, why do we sit still? Assemble ourselves. Assemble yourselves together. Let us enter into the defense cities. Let us go somewhere. We're wide open in the field out here. Let us retreat to the city that has a wall around it, some way to get protection. And let us be silent there. And the word silent is the word to perish. We're going to perish. We're going to go to the city and to give us a little more time. And what are we going to do? We're going to end up dying there. We're going to perish. And in verse 14, for the Lord our God hath put us to silence. He has given us over to perish. and given us water of gall, very poisonous water, bitter, poisonous, to drink, because we have sinned against the Lord. And the Lord has made it so that we are not going to come out of this, no matter where we go. So now you come to verse 15. Having said that, we look to the south. We're going to go south to Jerusalem, but there's no safety. Where are we going to go? So now, in verse 15, we looked for peace, but no good came. We looked for peace. And it's the verb is intensive, and it means to do something, to look at something intently. It means to concentrate on something and look at it with great excitement, great emotion. In other words, it's a very, what you're looking at, what you're looking for is very, very moving. You are moved with what you're doing. You're looking. Now, in verse 15, looking, intensive, it means to stretch out, to stretch. You would stretch your head, stretch your neck to see, to get closer, to stretch, to be firm, to be stretched out. And thus to hope, the word, to expect, to be stretched out, expectation, earnest, to expect, to earnestly be anxious, looking, expectation, looking out there, looking. You're looking for something. Well, what? They were looking for good. No good came. Verse 6:15, for a time of health, healing, and behold, trouble. We're looking for some hope. Now, here we are in the world, and we mentioned it last time in the section. And now, here we are again looking, and what are they doing? They're looking for something. They're looking for some hope. Now, and remember, they don't have any hope. And the reason they don't have any hope, because they've left God out. And when you leave God out, there is no hope, period, which you'll see if the Lord will help us. So now, having said that, and doing just that little part for the moment to get that, remember now, God is looking at them intently, looking at them to see where they're going to go, where is their heart, where is their head. So that, over to pick up that, go back 100 years. Going to drop back 100 years. And we're going to come and take a look. Isaiah, if you would. In Isaiah chapter 5. Remember God, Isaiah deals with the northern 10 tribes. And here in Isaiah chapter 5, God is going to help understand. You need to understand about Isaiah. Israel. And remember now, we just read in Jeremiah 8 and 13, they are a vine. They are a vine. They are a field. They're a very unprofitable garden. I got nothing out of this. Nothing. So now, back to Isaiah, chapter 5, verse 1. Now will I sing to my well-beloved a song of my beloved, touching his vineyard. My well-beloved hath a vineyard in a very fruitful hill, and he fenced it in, he took care of it, gathered out all the stones thereof, planted it with its choicest vine, and built a tower in the midst of it. He also made a winepress therein, and he looked, there's your verb, we looked for peace. We found it not. God, what are you doing? Well, he put a vineyard up. He put everything there to make it have full productivity. And he looked, verse 2, intensive, that he should bring forth grapes, and it brought forth wild grapes. So he was looking for something that he gave every opportunity to have good, but it came up bad. So now I go to verse 3. And now, O inhabitants of Jerusalem and men of Judah, judge, I pray you, betwixt me and my vineyard. What could have been done more to my vineyard that I have not done in it? In other words, tell me one thing I could have done to make it better. I made it everything just what they needed. Verse 4. What could have been done more to my vineyard that I have not done in it? Wherefore, when I looked, there's your verb, when I looked, when I stretched out to see that it should bring forth grapes, it brought forth wild grapes. And now go to, and I will tell you what I will do to my vineyard. I will take away the hedge thereof. It shall be eaten up, and break down the wall thereof. It shall be trodden down, etc. Sliding over to verse 7. For the vineyard of the Lord, for the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel. Judah, this is 100 years or so before they're going to get clipped like they are in Jeremiah, but no, they aren't paying attention to what Isaiah is trying to tell them. For the vineyard of the Lord of hosts, verse 7, is the house of Israel, and the men of Judah his pleasant plant. And he looked, there's your word, verb, for judgment, but behold oppression, for righteousness, but behold the cry. Woe unto them that join house to house, that lay field to field, till there be no place. In other words, everyone builds for their own end, property upon property. And where did the average person go? There's nowhere to go. You guys are taking over. That they may be placed alone in the midst of the earth. Now, having said that little bit, keeping that in mind, over to Jeremiah and chapter 13. Jeremiah and chapter 13. Now we're going back to the day Nebuchadnezzar's coming down. And in chapter 13, picking up the thought, if I may, in verse 13 and 16, you'll catch it. Now remember now, we looked for peace and there was none. Now, they're looking for things, but they aren't going to find them. Verse 16, give glory to the Lord your God before he caused darkness and before your feet stumble upon the dark mountains. And while you look for light, he turn it into the shadow of death and make it gross darkness. You're looking for peace, not going to find it. And you're looking for light, and you're not going to find it. You are in the wrong direction to have any benefits. Chapter 13, verse 16. Now, chapter 14 and in verse 19. Again, the movement all the way as this, all of this is taking place. Chapter 14 and in verse 19. Hast thou utterly rejected Judah? Hath thy soul loathed Zion? Why hast thou smitten us? And there is no healing for us. We looked for peace, and there is no good. We looked for a time of healing, and behold, trouble. Verse 20. We acknowledge, O Lord, our wickedness and our iniquity, the iniquity of our fathers, for we have sinned against thee. Do not abhor us for thy name's sake. Do not disgrace the throne of thy glory. Remember, break not thy covenant with us. What was the remnant looking for? God, don't dishonor your name. Everything you do, as we know from our study of prayer, is for his name's sake. Don't dishonor your throne. You are the sovereign, righteous God. Don't dishonor your position. Don't break your covenant. You made a contract, and the world is going to look at your contract, God. Don't disgrace your name. Don't disgrace your throne, I should say. Don't forsake thy name, and don't break your covenant, God. Verse 22. Are there any other among the vanities, the idols, the hopes, the dreams, the aspirations of the Gentiles that can cause rain? No. Can the heavens give showers? Are not thou he, O Lord, our God? Therefore we will wait upon thee, for thou hast made all these things. We will wait. Do you remember the word good up in verse 19? And you slide around down to the end of verse 21. We will wait. That's the same word, to look, to wait, to stretch out, to wait. We hope. We're waiting. We're hanging in there. We will wait, verse 22. We will wait upon thee, for thou hast made all these things. And God, if we, without you, we have no answer to anything. We have all kinds of things that people do and say and think, but we have no answers, none whatsoever. And remember Jeremiah, the weeping prophet. And in the book of Lamentations, you're looking at Jerusalem in ruins. And you see a city in ruins, as it were. Lamentations chapter 3. In Lamentations chapter 3, picking up, if I can, the thought to get the word that you're looking at. Verse 24, the Lord is my portion, saith my soul. Lamentations 3:24. The Lord is my portion, saith my soul, therefore will I hope in him. The Lord is good unto them that wait for him. There's your word, look. To wait, to be watching, stretched out, to hold fast, waiting, expecting. Verse 25, the Lord is good unto them that wait for him, to the soul that seeketh him. So here's Jeremiah looking, and Jerusalem going down, and the people are looking, and they don't have any hope, no good, no health, no healing, no light. It's bad news, and they're looking in the wrong place. They're not looking to God. And so they're looking at life just like we can. You can look at your work, your home, your school, your health, your wealth, your marriage. You can look at everything you want and draw a big circle and take a look at everything you want and then figure out how that's all going to work out 25 years from now. How's that? Give you a little space. You say, well, how's it going to work out tomorrow? Well, you say, I know how it's going to work out. But when you say, I know how it's going to work out, and if you know better, you don't say, I know how it's going to work out, because you know better than to say, I know how it's going to work out tomorrow, because I know, James 4, if I say anything like that, I have no idea. I have to say, Lord willing, it may or may not rain. I have to say, Lord willing, because I have no idea about tomorrow. But most can say, well, we know this and we know that, but that's why I gave you 25 years. Now, what do you know for sure in 25 days? You don't know. So where's hope? Hope is we're going to look at it. Where's hope? What are you hoping for? Well, we're hoping, moving, expecting, anticipating the process and the product, and we're looking for that. Well, how much can we look? How much do we hope? Very limited. When you sit down and examine what you're hoping for, take another look at it. You don't have much control over it at all, as much as you think you do. If you really look at it, well, I don't know. Thus and thus will happen if, and then everything has to happen to make it happen. And you have no control over that, all those things. So where's your hope? Well, your hope is the H-O-P-E just shrunk down in reality. And we have a hope. Now, what were they doing? Well, they had hope, and they were looking. And they were looking. And remember, back over to Jeremiah. And in chapter 8, among other places, remember God repeated this. What were the prophets and priests doing? Verse 10. Verse 11. For they have healed the hurt, the fear, the anxiety, the frustration, and they have hurt the daughter of my people slightly, and making it very insignificant, saying, what were they saying? All the time. Whenever you ask them a question, oh, it's all right, we're working it out, we're working it out, we're working it out. Peace, peace. But there was no peace. And remember, that's repeated, chapter 6. Chapter 6 and verse 14. They did it again. I mean, God earlier said, repeated it all over again. 6 and 14. They have healed also the hurt of the daughter of my people, slightly, very, with no value to it, saying, peace, peace, when there is no peace. In fact, they were ashamed, verse 15, when they had committed abomination. Were they ashamed? No. When they committed abomination, nay, they were not at all ashamed, neither could they blush. Therefore shall they fall among them that fall. At the time that I visit them, they shall be cast down, saith the Lord. All the people that hoped to be able to keep going and have everything work out, it wasn't going to work out. And you know what? They couldn't even blush about it. They couldn't blush. They didn't care. And you got all kinds of things you have. If you think, try to think, I'll give you a little thing to think about. If you try to think of one thing in our government that is going okay. Now, if you've done any thinking and you stay up on everything, that's a little exercise for you. Find me one thing that's going good. Try to find it. It's easier to do that than try to think of something not good. So now, here they are, and here we are looking, No, it isn't all right. And they couldn't blush. And thing I can think of, that minor thing, not minor really, I think there was a 12-year-old girls, didn't they take care of somebody, another girl, didn't they? Two 12-year-old girls killed another girl, knifed them over and over and over again, 19 times. I wonder if they blushed. I wonder if they blushed. I don't think so. They showed them in court, didn't see them blushing. Don't you blush? Aren't you embarrassed? Nope. When the heart gets like that, I want to tell you, there is no blushing. There is no shame. There is no, woe is me, I shouldn't have done that. There is no repentance. So now, having said that and keeping that in the forefront, and on the positive side, I want to get that part of it for you. On the positive side of this looking, would you go over with me in the light of Isaiah chapter 5, the vineyard, and it was all going down the tubes, the Israel in the north and Israel in the south. Isaiah chapter 40, looking, waiting. Jeremiah is waiting on God. That's what he's doing. It's a horrible time. Jerusalem, not doing well, in very, very bad condition. To everyone, bad condition. And Jeremiah is going to wait on God. Now, here, God helps us and reminds us in his wonderful grace to comfort, Isaiah chapter 40, to comfort Israel. So when we come to that chapter, comforting, and Isaiah 40, verse 28. Hast thou not known? Isaiah 40, 28. Hast thou not known? Hast thou not heard that the everlasting God, the Lord, the Creator of the ends of the earth, fainteth not, neither is weary? There is no searching of his understanding. He giveth power to the faint, and to them that have no might he increaseth strength. Even the youths shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. But they that wait, there's your word look, to stretch out. They that are waiting. What were they doing? They were looking, Israel was looking for peace, healing. Jeremiah is looking to God. Difference. Remember the little poem. I looked at the Lord Jesus Christ, and the dove of peace flew into my heart. I looked at the dove of peace, and peace flew away. As long as my eye was on God, I had his peace. When I took my eye off God and tried to lock on to the things of this life, benefits, love, joy, peace, all by their lonesome, they couldn't survive, and peace flew away. Now, so here when we come to verse 31, Isaiah 40, but they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. A wonderful, wonderful God. Comfort. So here in the midst of it all, Israel, you could have looked to God, but they didn't look to God. Over, if you would, while you're here in Isaiah chapter 49. Isaiah chapter 49. And in Isaiah chapter 49, picking up, please, if I can, in, verse 23, 49:23, Isaiah. And the king shall be thy nursing. Remember, this is Israel in the millennium. And God is going to go, and everyone, everywhere, is going to be take care of Israel. God is taking care of them, but everyone else is going to serve his people, Israel. And thus, I'll read verse 22 to get a little better background. Thus saith the Lord God, behold, I will lift up my hand to the Gentiles, nations. I will set up my standard to the people, and they shall bring thy sons, that's Mount Zion, Israel, in their arms, and their daughters shall be carried upon their shoulders. Kings shall be thy nursing fathers, and their queens, thy nursing mothers, and they shall bow down to thee, their face to the earth, and lick up the dust of thy feet. And thou shalt know that I am the Lord, for they shall not be ashamed that wait for me. And in the millennium, the nation of Israel, looking to God, God is going to honor them. And all kings, queens, rulers, everyone is going to bow to them. Bow to them. When they wait on God. Wow. Hang on. Now, and one other little place as we before we proceed. Over to Psalm 25. Psalm 25, all kinds of places, but just to lock it in a little bit. Wait on the Lord and be of good courage, etc. And in Psalm 25, picking up, please, in thought. And you know, Psalm of David, verse 1, 25:1. Unto thee, O Lord, do I lift up my soul. O my God, I trust in thee. Let me not be ashamed. Let not mine enemies triumph over me. Let none that wait, there's your verb, let none that have their necks stretched out, looking to me, waiting on me, to be firmly and locked onto. Let none that wait on thee be ashamed. We just read that. In the future, the millennium, they won't be ashamed. Well, before that, you don't have to wait to the millennium. Verse 3. Let none that wait on thee be ashamed. Let them be ashamed which transgress without cause. Sliding down. Verse 4. Show me thy ways, O Lord. Teach me thy paths. Lead me in thy truth and teach me. Why? For thou art the God of my salvation. On thee do I wait all the day long. I'm waiting, God, waiting on you. Now, over if you would, back to Jeremiah and chapter 8. They were looking, chapter 8, verse 15, they were looking for peace, and this no good came, a time of health and healing, and behold, only trouble. And the word trouble means to be disturbed, agitated, terrified, terror, alarm, distress, dread, all those words. They look, behold, terror. And then you keep the context going. Verse 16, what's terrible? What is so terrifying? And remember, we read it elsewhere in chapter 8 and that. The snorting of his horses, that's Nebuchadnezzar coming down up in Dan. And the snorting of his horses was heard from Dan. The whole land trembled. Think of hundreds, I don't know how many thousand. Think of Nebuchadnezzar's army, massive army, coming down. And the horses, battle horses, running, trampling everything and taking everything. Wow. And the whole land shakes when that happens. Wow. The snorting of his horses was heard from Dan. The whole land trembled. The sound of neighing and of his strong ones, that means his war horses. For they are come and have devoured the land and all that is in it, the city, and those that dwell therein. For behold, verse 17, I will send. Now God changes the illustration. Here's Nebuchadnezzar coming. God said, let me tell you, I'm going to give you another illustration that you'll be familiar with. Verse 17, I will send serpents, poisonous snakes, cockatrices. That means, that's another word to amplify poisonous snakes. It means deadly serpents. And thus, I will send serpents and cockatrices. That means all kinds of creeping, crawling things that poison. And I will send among you which will not be charmed. You can't go and have magic like a cobra and play a little flute or make believe and keep the thing away from you. You can't keep these poisonous, deadly snakes away from you. You can't get away from them. They're coming. And, to pick it up, verse 17, and you can't charm them, and they shall bite you. They're going to bite you. They're going to bite you. They, and the verb, they are eager. They are eager and energetic to go bite you. They are waiting to bite you. It would be like the demons in Revelation, when they come out, locusts. And the locusts, you don't have to tell them to do stuff. They are aggressive in doing everything they do. Wow. These snakes, Nebuchadnezzar is going to be like snakes. They are eager to bite you, eager to poison you, eager to get you, to destroy you. Saith the Lord, God. So where is it all coming from? Nebuchadnezzar, yes. But why, Nebuchadnezzar? Because we have not honored you, God. And thus, the Nebuchadnezzar's coming is irresistible. There's no stopping it. I am sending the serpents. I'm sending Nebuchadnezzar. And he's going to do what he's going to do. Now, having said that, having to bite, and the army, the invading army is awesome. So now we come again to chapter 8 and verse 15. We're looking for peace. We're looking for peace. We're looking in the direction of peace, and no good came. So when we have peace, there's a lot of wonderful things happen when we have peace, but we're looking for peace, and there were no peace. Because why? Because we're listening to all the false priests and prophets, and everyone's giving us a line of baloney. It ain't going to work. So we're all hoodwinked. Not all, but people were hoodwinked, and we're going down the corridor of time, and well, things will work out, and better, and better, and better. And if you are following anything, I don't see how it's possible. In fact, It's impossible. But we don't want to think about it, and we don't want to look at it. But then, when reality comes through the doorway, we aren't prepared. And we're looking for something that isn't, we aren't going to find it. We assumed a whole lot. Our assumptions were wrong. And what we're going to find is not going to be what we wish for, long for, or hope for. So now, having said that, in Jeremiah, we're looking for peace. We're looking for that, and we can't find any at all. So now, and remember now, and the Israelites, just going back, well, over to chapter 2, Jeremiah, just to get back to where you were in thought. Jeremiah chapter 2. And picking up, if I may, withhold thy foot from being unshod, and thy throat from thirst, being parched. In other words, here's the, you're going into idolatry, and if you keep going into idolatry, you're going to have huge problems. And if you keep doing that, and you don't stop, you're going to go end up in your pursuit, in your persistence to pursue idolatry, you're going to end up going into captivity. And when you go into captivity, you will really be thirsty and unshod. You probably won't even give your shoes when they go. Now, so the end of verse 25. Now, having said that, this is what's going to happen to you. So don't let that happen. Don't get so caught up in idolatry in your system that you get dehydrated. Is that a good word? You get dehydrated. You get all worn out. You have no supplement, no water, no food. In your pursuit of idolatry, in the pursuit of trying to have and keep everything like you'd like it to be, you aren't holding it. You aren't keeping it. And you're getting drained. If you keep doing that, you're going to end up in great trouble. And therefore, God warns them, don't keep doing what you're doing. But, the end of verse 25, but thou saidest, what did they say? There is no hope. No, for I have loved strangers, and after them I will go. Will I go? I'm going to do what I'm going to do anyway, no matter what. And you can find that all over, the news and everywhere. I'm going to do what I'm going to do, what I'm going to do. Government and everything. That's what we're going to do. That's what we're going to do. Wow. Wow. And thus, how do we help? How do we get some? We don't know. Because Israel isn't going to find any hope, isn't going to find any help. Chapter 17, Jeremiah. And in chapter 17, picking up, please, in verse 7, context you're familiar with, you know, I'll read verse 5 to get it. Thus saith the Lord, cursed be the man that trusteth in man, that maketh flesh his arm, whose heart departeth from the Lord. That's not good. On the other hand, for he shall be like the heath, tumbleweed in the desert, and shall not see good when good cometh. Remember, they were looking for peace, but they didn't see any good. They didn't see any good. Well, if you're going to go chase tumbleweed, get all dried out and roll around, there's no fruitfulness, there's no growth, there's no green, there's nothing fresh about you, you're dead. Dead weeds, dead plant. Verse 6, and he shall be like the heath in the desert and shall not see when good cometh, but shall inhabit the parched places of the wilderness and in a salt land and not inhabited. Blessed, on the other hand, blessed is the man that trusteth, there's the word look, to look, to stretch out. Blessed is the man that is trusting, stretching out, looking to, locking on to, trusting in the Lord, whose hope the Lord is. Now we're looking, waiting, looking to God, and the hope, hope. Where is the hope? What am I hoping in? Hope. They were hoping, verse 7, God, the Lord God, is their hope. A person. Over, if you would, to verse 13. Verse 13. O Lord, the hope of Israel, all that forsake thee shall be ashamed, and they that depart from thee shall be written in the earth, because they have forsaken the Lord, the fountain of living waters. Heal me, O Lord, and I shall be healed. Save me, and I shall be saved, for thou art my praise. Remember now, in the Jeremiah 8, we looked for health, healing, and there wasn't any. But if you were looking to God rightly, the benefits that you're missing are to be found in the living and only God. And thus, verse 15, behold, they say unto me, where is the word of the Lord? Let it come now. Verse 16, as for me, I have not hastened from being a pastor to follow thee, neither have I desired the woeful day. Thou knowest that which came out of my lips was right before thee. Now, verse 17, be not a terror, there's your word, don't be a terror, don't be a terror unto me, God. It's a terrible time. They looked from peace and health, and it was terrible, a terror, a day of terror. Don't be a terror to me, God. 17, be not a terror unto me. Thou art my hope in the day of evil. So when everything is dark, dreary, dull, dead, God and everything is, apart from God, ultimately. And so therefore, God, we're looking to you. And so we aren't counting on anything. We're counting on you. We're counting on you to work it all out in the most wonderful way that you do. And thus, so God, what are we saying? Well, God, you are to be honored. You are to be honored. Remember last time we shared together, like in Hosea 2, Israel was to look to God in the time of great trouble. And in that great time, the valley of Achor, and the word Achor is trouble, and remember we did it back in Joshua, Judges, Joshua. And in the valley of trouble, you'll find hope. There's a door in the midst of the world you live in, dark, difficult, dangerous, discouraging, depressing, depleting, all those things and more. And in that setting, there's always a door of hope. Always a door of hope. There's always a way out. There's always a way when everything is hopeless, there's hope. Now, having said that a little bit, and keeping that in mind, if you would, and therefore, God, where is our hope to be found? Our hope is to be found in your lovely, lovely person. And God, we have to go through trouble, as we read in Romans chapter 5. You have to go to the trying of your faith, worketh patience, etc., and experience and all of that, and produces a wonderful learning, and we get expectant, we work through today, so therefore we'll get out of bed and try tomorrow, and the next day, and we'll try this afternoon, and then if we make it this afternoon, we'll try tonight, and we keep plugging along, and somehow, if we're paying attention, we're learning, growing, and we're catching on. How do we do it? We didn't find our stimulus in that someone's going to give you a great big steak dinner at 6 o'clock. You didn't find your stimulus there. You found your stimulus in God. And God is what got us through. Whether you felt good or bad, whether it was easy or hard, you're looking to God. And that's where the hope is. God, we must believe that you are. You are the hope. The Lord. You're a hope. A person. A person. And when I look to you, God, I find hope. A wonderful, wonderful expectancy. That's the word hope in Greek language, etc. To be earnestly anticipating, wonderfully anticipating good, coming up in tomorrow. And we proceed like that. And we proceed like that. Over, if you would, please, to Romans. Romans and chapter 15. We didn't get very far, but I hope you got a little bit where we wanted to go anyway. Romans chapter 15. And would you please note, may I go directly, Romans 15, going directly to verse 4. For whatsoever things were written aforetime. That's why you're reading Jeremiah. Why Jeremiah? Because God said, I want it recorded. So when you read Romans, you'll know why you're going to read Jeremiah. Because he recorded it. Why did you record Jeremiah? Why did you record Isaiah, Hosea, Joel? For whatsoever things were written aforetime were written. So here we are sitting here for our learning. We're not supposed to be stupid about this. Let's learn something. That's what it's for. It's yesterday's history to give us understanding and impetus to go forward. We're written for our learning that we through patience, bearing up under, and comfort of the Scriptures, we might have hope. What do you mean? Expectancy. A wonderful, wonderful reading. And you understand, Jeremiah, the people of Israel, didn't have any hope. Jeremiah had hope. Habakkuk had hope. Daniel had hope. Ezekiel had hope. But they didn't. And we need to have hope. That's what we need. We need to learn from it. We learn from history. The Scriptures, that's why we're reading them, so that we have hope. And sliding over, if I may, to verse 13 for time's sake. Now, the God of what? The God of hope. See? Who has all the hope? God does. He does. So. You want hope? Look at God. God's very hopeful. He's in charge. So God said, when you look to me, the God of hope, now the God of hope, fill you with what? All joy and peace. How am I going to get the joy and peace? By believing. And when I believe, when I'm resting down or reading the Scriptures are given for our hope, and we're reading them with some measure of resting down in them, and that God has given them to us so that we would have the benefits here and now. Now the God of hope fill you with peace and with joy, with all joy and peace in believing. And when you believe, when you're resting down on the Word of God, that purpose results, you may abound, overflow, increase. And you'll please note, what are you supposed to be full of? Hope. Now where did you get hope? You believe what he said. When you believe what he said, it encourages you to look to God, because here we are. I'm not there with Jeremiah. I'm here. And so God, I'm looking to you. That's what they did. That's what you tell me. And when I look to you, I read your word, I'm encouraged, that I may abound, increase in hope through, and God is, do I have to generate this? Do I have to generate it? No, I don't. What I need to do is, one at a time, may abound in hope through the power, the dynamite, the dynamic of the Spirit of God. And in Romans chapter 5, in the trouble, heartache, headache, trial of your faith, what does that do? It produces a hanging in there. And what does that do? It produces hope. Now, you hang in there because you're going to, what did we just read? Looking, they looked for peace, waiting. And they couldn't, it never came to them because they were looking to the wrong place for the wrong, in the wrong way and the wrong reasons, and they never got it. There are thousands of people today that are looking in the wrong way, in the wrong place, and they have no hope. They're trying to get it, trying to find it, not going to get it. No, never find it. No, it's something you do, God. And God, you do it. So when I, in my trial, in the valley of Achor, trouble, there's a door of hope. Well, God, I'm going to have to look to you in the midst of my circumstances, and instead of going down, I'm going to come up. I'm going to look to you. And God, here I am. And the minute I start looking to God like that, all of a sudden everything else isn't so terrible. Everything is tolerable. And you look to God, and God fires up the heart. I didn't do it. You don't do it. God does it. God does it for you. And your heart is full. Wow. In the midst of hope, Israel doesn't have any. They looked and didn't have any. Didn't have any healing or health. No light. They lived in darkness. It got darker and darker. But boy, that isn't for us. No. That's why you gave me those scriptures, God. That's why we've got Jeremiah. That's why we've got your word, so that we don't have to be stoops about this. Think of trying to get to God if you don't have the Bible. And you can. God will allow you to get to him. But if you get a Bible and you don't read it, if you lived in the middle of the Sahara Desert and you're there with the other bugs on that, not that you're a bug, and you're out there, when you're out there, you can look to God and God will be great. I'm telling you, God will be super duper to you. No question. Day and night. But when you got a Bible and we have all the benefits and we don't take advantage of them, boy, God doesn't do anything. No? And here we got them. And God, we're going to look to you and you're going to do a wonderful thing. And I'm over and I'm sorry a little bit. And say hello. But a little. Because you want to have hope. You're living in a more and more hopeless society. I'm telling you, it just isn't there. This isn't there. Wow. Nope. You want to have it, and boy, you aren't going to get it looking out here. You're going to get it looking to a great God. He that cometh to God must believe that he... He is. He is your hope. He is. You want to know about tomorrow? He's the one. You want to know about next week? He's the one. You want to know how it's going to work out in the middle of the night? He's the one. Looking to God. God, I'm looking to you to outwork this whole thing. And God, I can't do it. I don't even understand it. I do my little bit as best I can. But God, the bottom line is, I got to wait on you. I'm looking to you, God. And they that wait upon you would renew their strength. And no matter how weak or wayward, God would make them strong. As eagles. Wow. Wow, it's a wonderful thing. Anyway, you may have a particular request as we go. Remember the ladies coming up on next Friday,